Well, thank you all for joining us. My name is Haley Tsukayama. I am legislative activist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. So I concentrate mostly on state legislation, which means I have been intimately connected with the California Consumer Privacy Act this year. I would estimate it's been about 70% of my work. And so I'm very glad to have you join us here and talk about this law. And I'm going to let my fellow panelists introduce themselves.
Hey, hi everyone. I'm Erica Portnoy. I'm a staff technologist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. My engineering work focuses on CertBot, which is EFF's Let's Encrypt client, helping people to get certificates for their websites so they can use SSL, TLS, and have encrypted connections. My policy work tends to focus mostly on encryption, which often has overlaps with the privacy aspect of things. In both the engineering aspect and in the cryptography aspects as well.
I'm Ryan Daniels. I'm an attorney here in Georgia. I have a statewide practice. I represent consumers against bad actors under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, Fair Credit Reporting Act, Electronic Funds Transfer Act, basically all the alphabet soups of federal law, and try to deal with issues sometimes involving privacy and data breaches, but usually under the Fair Credit Reporting Act is where I get into that type of stuff.
All right. So I'm going to just start by giving a quick overview of CCPA and how we got here, assuming that, you know, not everybody is following everything that comes out of Sacramento. So last year California passed the California Consumer Privacy Act, or CCPA, as we'll probably refer to it, after a ballot initiative gained tremendous public support and put pressure on the legislature to enact it into a law. It passed within a week because they said, you know, we'd rather have this as a law than a ballot initiative. A ballot initiative is very difficult to amend, and so they put a law through pretty quickly. The law sets a pretty important foundation for privacy law in the state, with four basic rights. You have a right to know what personal information a business has about you, and where that personal information by category was sent, where it came from or was sent. You have a right to delete personal information, request a deletion of personal information that a business has collected from you. You have the right to opt out of the sale of personal information from a company. And then there is a sort of a weak non-discrimination right in CCPA, which says basically, if I exercise my privacy rights under this act, I ask what you have, I ask you to delete, I ask you not to sell, that you can't then discriminate against me, give me either charge me more or give me a poorer level of service. You know, these are baseline protections at a start. The law goes into effect on January 1st, 2020. This legislative session has been a lot about some people trying to strengthen this law, some people trying to weaken this law before it goes into effect. The Attorney General is also writing specific regulations to sort of give instructions to businesses on how to comply with the law that will be out this fall. I think that's a pretty good summary of where we stand right now. So one question that's posed by the title of this panel is whether this legislation is a good model for the rest of the country. So I'm going to start there.
We kind of had a laugh about it at the start because I made a very disparaging remark, I think, about how laws get made currently. You know, the European Union has a very similar law, and they've got that on the books. As far as how the genesis of everything happened, it was a ballot initiative that was a lot stronger and a lot more protective. And the legislature essentially reacted to that and threw something together, as you said, very quickly. And they're still in the process of figuring out what amendments they're going to put on it because they were afraid that the ballot initiative, they can't change anything. And it could be something that, quite frankly, the people that are paying them money for their campaigns didn't like, and then they would have to deal with that sandwich. So as far as using it as a complete and total model for the whole country in each individual state, I don't know how good of a model it is. One, because we don't know everything about it yet. We won't know until the 15th, and then you got the regs that are come out from the AG's office. I think that there needs to be some sort of baseline, though, for every state, or at least for the whole country, just because this is getting to the point where it's not cutting edge anymore. We're pretty deep on the knife, and, you know, our data is important. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see something at the level come out nationally. I think as it currently stands, or at least as I last checked it, there might have been new amendments since I last looked, I think, maybe some literally today. And so it's still changing and still in flux, so we won't know exactly how it comes out, but I feel like the thing that I would want personally as a national model is slightly stronger than the thing that is likely to actually go on the books. One example is private right of action, right? We want individuals who have been harmed by this to be able to sue the companies. And as it currently stands, correct me if I'm wrong, there is no private right of action. So I can't personally go up and say, I'm angry at what you've done with my data. No, the Attorney General's office has to be the one to choose to do it on my behalf. And, you know, I know some people who work for the Attorney General's office. They're great people. Like, but I don't want to have to rely on them to be doing all of my own privacy protection for me. I want the ability to take that into my own hands.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously we work for the same organization, yeah. So we have similar thoughts about CCPA, but, so there, the private right of action that exists in CCPA is limited to data breach, and we, of course, would like to see that extended to everything, and one of the bills that EFF supported to try and strengthen CCPA this year would have given greater enforcement, would have added a private right of action for all violations of CCPA, mm-hmm. and would have helped give the Attorney General's office more resources. They said in testimony about that bill, which was defeated, that they would only really be able to bring, I think, 5 cases a year for all of California, and that's given their current resources. So, you know, that is one reason that we definitely...
And that's already with the expanded resources that the bill provides.
Correct.
Which is more than it currently has.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's important to note, too, that in California, you have the Rosenthal Consumer Protection Act. In Georgia, you have the Georgia Fair Business Practices Act. There's each state has their own sort of quasi big bucket consumer protection statute. When we're talking about no private right of action for certain sections of, you know, beyond data breach, it also means you can't bring a claim under the Georgia Fair Business Practices Act or the Rosenthal Act. So you literally have no recourse if somebody's violating this other than to hope the AG's office decides to prosecute it. And the problem with that is resources. Mm-hmm. But also, if you look, state AGs typically, when they're going to prosecute something like that, are looking for a class and not a single individual. Just because it's inefficient to prosecute a single violation, because you're talking easily, and I do it under fee-shifting statutes, but, you know, when I bring a case, it's, we don't get too far into it, and we've, you know, spent $20,000 lawyer time. You know, in a perfect world, yes, everyone would be able to do that with the AG's office, but that's a lot of manpower to have to go into prosecuting, you know, every single case.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. I would actually, it would be helpful for me to sort of get a sense of who is in the audience so that I can get a best idea of sort of how to focus the conversation. So I'm curious if just a couple people would raise their hands and tell me, you know, why you wanted to come to this panel and what it was about the panel that made you interested. Yes, sir.
I'm a lawyer. I work in discovery.
Oh, wait, hold on one sec.
Oh, sorry. We got the box.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, Lord.
It's soft.
Yeah.
Keep talking. It is just a very neat, it's more fun than the passing the mic around.
I still, like, you know, I feel like it's like throwing a computer.
What number?
It should be, hang on, sorry.
It's all right?
Technical difficulties.
Delicate electronics being tossed through the air.
Oh, the tossing of it makes you nervous.
It's like a computer being thrown through the air. No. Try telling some jokes in the meantime. Do you know any jokes?
I certainly don't know any CCPA jokes.
On one, right?
Yeah. Portland's on a five.
Let's give a big round of applause to the volunteers helping out in this.
Do we have volume?
Oh, beautiful.
All right.
Hi there. I'm a lawyer. I work in eDiscovery, and we've been counseling our clients for the past 2 years about GDPR implications. And I was actually with some of my coworkers the other day, and they mentioned this law, and I had no idea what it was. So I thought I'd better do what I can to find out something.
Okay. Awesome. You, sir.
I'm a small business owner. Want to, you know, publish apps and web pages and just really concerned about the threshold being too high, or the system, you know, it can should scale up for the big companies? Does it scale down for the small companies?
Bear with us, guys. I'm not used to having to walk the mic around.
Test.
Yay. I'm an enterprise architect and consultant, and so large data, big data, people keeping things, keeping for how long, and then abilities to purge, is that in there, and stuff like that. And just public policy as a whole, great interest.
Cool.
Can you hear me? Okay, cool. I'm a site reliability engineer for a company based out of California, and we've echoing the GDPR stuff, so I'm interested to see how this might impact the company and me in the future.
Okay. I'm a software developer for a company that makes software that helps other companies manage like their data privacy, like regulations, compliance that they're involved with. And I hear literally CCPA on a daily basis, so I just want to learn more about it.
Okay. And maybe just one more.
So I work with insurance distribution for like agents who need to get insurance for people, mm-hmm. and just hearing how this would apply for liability is a new topic would be very interesting.
Okay. All right. I can't promise super specific answers to all those questions, but that gives me a better idea of who you all are, and I appreciate that. So a lot of compliance questions. So Ron, I'm interested in sort of what if that echoes sort of questions you are also hearing, and yeah.
I mean, that's generally, in my realm, what we have been concerned about is what sort of things happen when you're not compliant. You were talking about e-discovery. I know exactly what the concern is there. You sue Walmart. Walmart has who knows how many people's information, and then somebody like him is going to be making sure that data doesn't go from the law firm that's representing Walmart to somebody else. And you know, what sort of steps do you put in place to keep stuff like that from coming? And then you've got the issues of, you know, well, what can Walmart share with their lawyers? What can Walmart share with anybody? And Walmart's a bad example, I guess, because they're not a California company, but y'all get the drift. Is, you know, there's lots of questions about exactly what do you have to do to be compliant. I think there was the Spotify amendment at some point in time is what they named it, that said that if you agree to have, for instance, a company share information about you to get you better quotes on car insurance, they could do that. That's sort of the thing that the whole thing is trying to prevent, is your data being shared, but you're opting into it. And then there's the concern from a business compliance perspective. The act as it's written now, without any of these new amendments, if I am, let's say I'm not working for myself, I'm working for somebody, I call somebody and I'm dealing with them on a business basis, they get my data on a business basis. As the law is written, me as an employee of XYZ company, the data they get from me then is protected by the statute. And I'm not sure that that's an intended result, because it's not my personal data, it's my work data, but it's still personal. And it's one of those questions that I've seen a lot of people burn a lot of light bulbs in their heads trying to figure a way, you know, how exactly do we navigate through this?
Yeah. Well, on that particular point, I will say, you know, we are looking at the employee-employer relationship and sort of that sort of aspect of business data. There is a bill. I mean, it's like none of the bills are going anywhere until the end, you know, until they're voted on. So that's my next 3 weeks. That is certainly something that we're looking at. And, you know, we've talked with the labor groups and we've talked with like a lot of different people to try and figure out sort of all the, I mean, the issue with it being such a hasty bill was that, you know, there were a lot of, it set down, I think, a lot of principles. And then, you know, we're sort of seeing now that we've had a year to think about it, sort of what's shaken out. There was also a couple questions about GDPR and requests. And Erica, I wanted to throw that one to you.
Yeah, so fortunately, in many ways, it is not GDPR. It shares some similarities with GDPR, but especially when you're talking about the part of it that is the consumer's right to access the data that the company has about them and requests that the company delete that data, it's done in the wording ends up being kind of different, and some of the things that from a consumer privacy perspective, I would consider failures of GDPR, CCPA is actually a bit better about. So for example, there was a recent study actually at SUPS, the Symposium on Usable Privacy and Security, which after GDPR, various companies needed to have portals available for consumers to be able to see their data. And so the question was, well, if I take one of these portals and I try to get someone else's data, am I likely to be able to do that? Are these companies required to give me the data because of their GDPR requirements? And so the way that GDPR works is you essentially put in your name and maybe one or two pieces of information, and you get to see all the data that the company has about you. But it's not doing the, it's not required to do any of the checks, and it can just, it's required to just show you all of this data. But that is not the case in CCPA. In GDPR, right, these researchers found that, like, a good like 80% of the sites, they were able to get information for someone else's name, or they would just make up fake names and get information for people. Some of these are implementation, like one of them, they realized it was actually just a bad SQL query, that the name was just the overlap of two different fields, like they were looking for Lowell or something like that, and one person's name, their first name ended with L-O and the next name started with W-E-L-L, and that's still returned as a result. So that's an implementation error, not a GDPR requirements error, but it's still the sort of privacy breach that is an accidental effect of trying to be better about privacy. And so CCPA is much more careful about that. And so you don't show all the information about people. If you don't have a login, you don't already have a password and account on the device. Outside of that, you can still request to delete the data and stop doing tracking, but it won't show you the information about it unless you've already done the existing authentication mechanisms. You don't need a whole different authentication pathway to be able to show this data in the first place, which is a lot, A, less burden on the companies, and B, more privacy protecting.
Are there specific things in the like AG regulations that you, like particularly difficult problems, or I'm just kind of curious, like
In terms of what sort of problems?
Like verification, I know is a thing that we hear about a lot.
Yeah, so I mean, authentication is a hard problem. There's a whole industry already out there for authentication, right? There are companies whose entire role is to provide authentication for other companies. And so you want authentication, the step of saying, hello, yes, I am Erica. Please prove to me that you are Erica. Okay, I can prove to you that I am Erica. Just doing that process right there is an entire difficult field. And so what we want for the most sensitive information is to piggyback onto what organizations already have in terms of that. So we want like if you're going to return any of the information that you've collected about me, things that you think are aspects of me, like what advertising buckets you've put me in, that should all be behind the existing authentication system. Because when you think about it, you don't want to have to create an entire separate parallel system of authentication, which is already such a hard problem, just for the GDPR, CCPA data access points of things. And so being able to have most of that existing inside the existing system is definitely an improvement.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I did also want to ask Ron about, you know, sort of, because this is a question I get a lot, right, about CCPA is sort of how does it affect people outside of the state of California, which I realize that people do exist outside of the state of California.
I think from a sheer compliance perspective that some of these companies, it just logistically does not, I mean, we were talking about, you had a question about scaling up and scaling down. Some of these companies are so big that it is virtually impossible for them to just be compliant in California, which is a boon to some of us. The bad side is right now there is no private right of action except for data breach. But even moving beyond that, you don't have private rights of action if you do not have a California citizen under the current law. And the Georgia AG, for instance, can't prosecute a violation of it unless it's a California resident. And really, the way it's written, it says just the California AG. So conceptually, we are all going to have some level of additional protections because of it, just because you're talking about a massive state with a massive population, and it's impossible for some of the very large companies to isolate and say, we're just going to do this, because that's when you're going to have a parallel system, you're going to have multiple systems, and that's when you have problems. You know, from the global perspective of can you really get any traction with it if you're not in California? Well, I mean, there's no private right of action is one problem, but the other problem is it really only applies to California citizens in terms of enforcement.
And I also want to add about the like big small business part of that. So it doesn't actually just apply blanket to every single organization. You have to meet one of these requirements, which is have a gross revenue greater than $25 million, annually buy, receive, sell, or share the personal information of more than 50,000 consumers, households, or devices for commercial purposes, or derive 50% or more of annual revenue from selling consumers' personal information. So if like you're a small startup and you only have like 200 customers total, right? And you're not selling your information, you're not getting your revenue from selling this information, like you are just providing a service directly to the people and you're not engaging in data brokerage in the first place, there's a chance that it will not actually apply. But it does mean that the large organizations, like any large organization, is going to have to deal with this, you know, having more than 50,000 customers. That's easily many internet companies. And any company that is specifically interested in doing data brokerage, so that's the 50% of revenue, will have to deal with it. But like, if you are a small business who doesn't deal in those things, it's like not something you necessarily will have to worry about.
And there's also exceptions too for the, like under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, if you're obtaining information pursuant to that, or HIPAA, the Health and Privacy Act information. I think also certain financial provisions under Graham Lee Bailey. Graham Leach Bailey, yeah, that crazy law that needs a private right of action built into it but doesn't have one. You know, there are exceptions too for those. So let's say you are a company that has 50,000 people's data in California, but it's all pursuant to credit reporting, probably doesn't apply to you if that's all you're using that data for.
Yeah. And I will say, too, you know, certainly in discussions we've had about amendments and, you know, sort of we've heard from a lot of specific industries saying, you know, hey, we're really worried about how this affects this one thing we do or how this affects something we do. There was a question about insurance. You know, we talked with the insurance industry and we made clear, you know, jurisdiction, you know, is with the insurance laws, right? Or, you know, so CCPA, you know, it is a big law and it does affect a lot of people, but there are a lot of places, research is another one that I can think of where, you know, we've really been talking to people about how to make sure that this doesn't blow everything up. So, and I think we're about halfway through, so I'm willing to open up for questions if that's all right with everybody.
Hey there, I was just wondering, in the absence of a statutory right of private action, has anyone ever had success, anyone, that's a broad category, but are you aware of anyone having had success under just kind of traditional tort law, you know, negligence or public disclosure of private facts, those kind of things that you could maybe fit, could retrofit onto, you know, data protection?
I will let our lawyer take this question.
I don't think there's a whole lot of case law out there where folks have been successful with those type of actions. And I think part of the problem is if they're just disclosing it to another vendor or another company for a business purpose, you may not be fully aware that how often, how frequent that happens, and it's not necessarily a public disclosure. I don't profess to be an expert under California law. I'll tell you, under Georgia law, that you wouldn't have a good claim for public disclosure just because Georgia has not been too favorable to those claims. I think part of the problem, because a lot of stuff I've been wanting to do is try to find a way to bootstrap create a private right of action for violation of another statute based on that. And thus far, I've not found a great way to do it with the California Consumer Privacy Act. That doesn't mean that there isn't some way to bootstrap some sort of traditional tort claim or fraud claim or anything like that, but I just think it's going to be difficult to do.
I think, too, to the point of case law, you know, it can be difficult in these situations, in data breaches or in sharing or when you don't know that your information is being shared to show harm, which is a problem that that we hear a lot. And so that is one reason that we wanted to put the private right of action in for all violations of CCPA. So that was just very clear. in the statute.
That's the real benefit to the statutes or consumer protection statutes is they usually allocate some measure of statutory damages plus your actual damages. And the reason why that is significant is you may have your data shared and not experience any damage whatsoever other than an invasion of your rights. And how do you put a dollar figure on your rights? That's a difficult proposition anytime you try to do it. Certainly if your data is shared and a bad actor gets it and runs away with all your information, ruins your life, you get kicked out of your house, you live in a van down by the river, yeah, that's easy to show damage and you could probably get there. Those are rare cases. They used to be more frequent, but companies have got more sophisticated.
Next question.
Okay. So you mentioned individuals accessing or interacting with a company because of some kind of corporate activity. As companies develop these systems to become compliant and to help with that process, are there things that you'd like companies to be aware of in order to prevent additional pitfalls like that, or are there things that you'd like proactively to be developed into these systems so that going forward there is, additional rights developed into them that even though they're not guided by law are just kind of beneficial to the customer?
Is that sort of like,
I think the easiest framework that I have, like the most universally applicable framework that I have, is respecting user choice and making sure that users have the ability to understand. There's transparency around what users can do with their data, and they have the ability to control where that data goes and what it's used for. Like, there should always be, as in my opinion, as a user, I should always have the ability to control what is done with my data, and providing clear ways of doing that. So show, like, it's, you know, you're not gonna show the entire internals of a system and every piece of where every bit of data goes to the user. That's not feasible to show to the user. But giving them meaningful controls, for example, I don't want my data to be shared with any third parties. I don't want my data to be batch processed. Actions that I take shouldn't be analyzed, right? There's obviously always going to be exceptions for this. You want fraud detection, you want spamming detection. But in terms of the entire business model is I am taking this and trying to learn things about the user. The more control an individual has over that process, the easier it's going to be to A, deal with this when requirements do come in, and B, to be respectful of users in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I would also say, as we pass to the next person, that is also just, it has been amazing to me how many companies they collect data that they don't have a purpose for, or, you know, that they don't realize that they have, or, you know, just sort of doing that basic audit of what do you have, why do you have it, do you really need it? I think, you know, it's really good for businesses to just do in general.
Save space, too.
There you go.
I do ask, our mic is getting a little bit old, so make sure you speak up, please.
Thanks.
Hello. I'm a software developer, and so one of the things that I always see with, you know, systems like this is how difficult it is to actually get a meaningful action done. Like for trying to delete a Facebook account, for example, it's an entire long dog and pony show, and even then it's like you can't do it in one step. You got to come back, you know, a day later and delete it or something like that. Are there any concerns or, you know, preventions to make sure that a company that is nominally abiding by this law in a way that I as a consumer can go in and say, okay, you've got some data about me, I want you to delete it, and it's, you know, a one or two click process beyond the authentication, obviously. But if I say delete it, it's just a delete it and it's gone kind of thing, or is it still in the amendment stages?
I would say certainly that in, I'm trying to think. Well, if I may be speaking out of turn, but I think that is a process that the Attorney General's office is really looking at. I mean, certainly when you're looking at, I'm obviously pro-law, being the legislative activist at EFF, but I think when you're looking at laws, particularly when you're looking at laws that deal with technical things, you don't want to enshrine too much of the process into the law itself. You want that to be a little more flexible because obviously best practices change or, you know, systems change, and you don't want to say you must do this and you must do it this way. So I think, you know, the AG is looking at that, and the AG regulations are a little more flexible to be changed. So that doesn't quite answer your question, but.
So I'm curious about re-identified data, and if there are any provisions for de-identified data in this act.
Under CCPA, I think the privacy community has a serious concern about the definitions of re-identified and de-identified, and making sure that they are, what they say they are, you know, truly to be the sorts of protections that we really want. There has been a massive effort from industry to change the meaning of de-identified data, we're really sort of thinking that through in terms of, like, you know. There are obviously some, you know, if you're tracking trends or something like that, that there are times when you would need de-identified data, but just to make sure that it's, you know, that it really can't be re-identified in any meaningful way. Sorry, I'm rambling a little bit, but it is definitely an issue that we think about in CCPA.
Hey, I'm curious about kind of the comparison between GDPR and CCPA. If a company is compliant under the GDPR, will they be compliant under CCPA for most industries?
All right. So, as you can tell from our expressions, the comparative analysis has been difficult on GDPR and CCPA. I think GDPR is really, which is the European law, is really a model that is dependent on sort of the way that government is structured in Europe, right? It's you have a lot more people, for example, that work in the Data Protection Agency for Ireland as a member state than you do who work in the state of California. So it's hard to draw parallels. I think many of the principles are shared. In terms of both laws, and again, the Attorney General regulations, I hate to keep saying that, but that is one thing that I think will sort of solidify sort of how compliance looks in both of these cases. So.
I think the best answer to that is generally yes, but also not yes, because there are nuances to both that. There's certain baseline things that are similar enough that if you're compliant with one, you should be compliant with the other, unless something changes. But they are right now different beasts altogether. So you can't just slap what's being dealt in the EU and say it's going to work in California. It is a wholesale, just slapping labels. That's not going to work.
So I have a question about scope. You mentioned large companies over 25 million. So for example, GDPR scope is actually still kind of up in the air 2 years later, right? So there's still a question about expats, right? So anybody in the EU, they're definitely covered. Any data in the EU is definitely covered, but what if you have a UK citizen or EU citizen living in another country? Right now everybody's saying we don't cover them, right? And nobody wants to talk about backup data. But I guess under the CCPA, are you saying that any company that does business in California with over $25 million in revenue, or do they have to have a presence? I mean, how far have they defined the scope? And then the second question I kind of have is around technical controls, because the EU with GDPR kind of defined broadly, but with certain specific things in there, kind of like suggestions, I guess, around how to protect that data. And there's very clear, the DPA, the DPIA, what do you do to identify that data and what you have to do as a company? So I'm just curious, has any of that been developed in California? So for example, have they made any recommendations around, protecting against a data breach by using encryption, for example?
Okay, do you
want to
take the first part?
Yeah, I'll address the first part. The way it's crafted is, it only applies to people presently in California and companies that are dealing primarily with us. So those exceptions, they are tied to California. If you become a non-resident, which is a very legal specific term, I can move from Georgia to Alabama when I decide that I have domiciled myself in Alabama, I'm no longer an Alabama. I'm no longer a Georgian. I'm an Alabamian. It's similar. Once you decide that you're no longer in California, you've moved somewhere else. Your permanent address is somewhere else. It's not applying then. It may still apply to a company, and those are the kind of the check marks for the scope. Is, you know, how much money are you making in California? How many people are you dealing with in California? What is the setup of your business? You are absolutely right, though. Nobody wants to talk about back data under. I mean, that's a whole can of worms that I don't think that they have a good answer for yet with either law. You may have a different opinion of that, but that's been my impression.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing any specific details there that give the requirements, recommendations, anything like that. Like that's, yeah, as far as I know.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that is also part of the, I'm just going to keep saying it, the Attorney General's process. And they are, you know, they're in the midst of taking feedback on, they had a bunch of sort of open houses. They went around the state of California. They heard from a bunch of people. They took a lot of comments. So, you know, it's been difficult, I think, for the AG to do their job as well while, you know, we're still fighting over amendments in the legislature. But, you know, it's all sort of, it's...
You know, I just can't imagine any sort of data protection specifics that the Internet Association would be okay with, right? Like, these are the people who are, you know, like the Internet Association... Good. It does many things, but one of the things that they're very good at is these are some of the people developing like the top security recommendations, and so to encapsulate those in the bill and say you can't innovate on security protections and data protection, like, these are the people who invented data protection, doing it at a scale that no one else is, right? Like, if I'm going to give them credit for one thing, it's their data protection abilities, right? So I would be honestly shocked if it managed to get in.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Cool. I just have a quick question. So,
sorry, could you lift it?
Yep. Better. Is that cool? Yeah.
Better.
Awesome. Yeah, I can hear myself. So, no, I just have a quick question, and it's a little bit speculative, but with the California Privacy Act and everything like that, do you see a situation where that will start to push movements in other states and maybe fragment the larger net neutrality movements and some of these other movements, or do you think that there'll be a reconciliation process? And as an example, the EPA, when California lobbied to have stricter fuel mandates, that never really caught on in other states. It was always sort of the split brain model of California and everyone else. So I was just kind of curious how you think the movement is, what direction you think this may in the future go, essentially.
Yeah, that's a great question. So in addition to doing California state legislation, I do state legislation across the country. We have seen CCPA style bills come up in a number of states. Off the top of my head, I can think of Maryland, North Dakota, Illinois, and sort of New York.
Colorado.
I think they're working on one. You know, we actually saw, I think, I'm going to say less than 20, more than 10, get introduced in this past legislative session. Now, not a lot of those went very far, both because these are bills that, you know, as I said, to me they seem like pretty basic rights, but they are heavily opposed by industry, and so there was a lot of lobbying in a lot of those states. You know, and when you're a North Dakota legislator and Microsoft comes to your door, you kind of listen. And so we did see a lot of stalling of bills across the country. But, you know, we are seeing, you know, I'm getting calls now for next session. You know, we want to look at a bill like this. There is some sense of wait and see to see what happens in California once it takes effect and, you know, once the regulations come out. But I think we're definitely seeing a push. I think in terms of privacy legislation, it's one of the areas where legislators are far behind the desire of consumers to see legislation. We've certainly seen that on the national level as well. And so I think we're only going to see more of these laws, and hopefully, you know, stronger than we see in California even.
I don't think you'll... I almost hope that you don't see a national push, because I think if you had a legitimate national push in Congress to do an overarching for the whole United States, that it would be the result of some really, really bad things for your data. They're not going to act on this without there being a, you know, a catastrophic event. That's just not going to happen. Unless, you know, there's some sort of civil uprising and people absolutely demand it, which is basically how the CCPA came about.
It's essentially.
But, you know, you're talking about extrapolating that across 50 states and some territories, and that's a sort of a cumbersome task.
Yeah. And I think as we move to the next person, I mean, I do just want to say, you know, national legislation is, I think my fear with national legislation is that it will be a law that overrides a lot of the advances that we've made in states. So, like, there are a lot of states that have good data privacy laws. Illinois has a very good Biometric Information Privacy Act. Vermont has a very good Data Broker Act. We see a lot of good broadband privacy acts. And so my concern would be anything negotiated at a national level, particularly with this Congress, would be weaker.
Oh, they would definitely want preemption.
Yeah. So. So, all right.
Yes, hello. So I know we've moved past this a little bit, and I hate to keep coming back to the private right of action aspect, but I just want to ask quickly, I know it's important to be able to hold companies to account and not have to go through the AG process, but when I hear private right of action, I also think more trolls, mm-hmm. and I think the world doesn't need more trolls. Is there any talk on the regulatory side that you know of finding a way to marry the two so you have legitimate people who have a private right of action and you keep more trolls out of the world?
Interesting question. So not negotiations that I'm familiar with. I would say, you know, we've looked at the way that private rights of action have played out in other states with other laws. To me, it's just such an important, I mean, I certainly hear what you say, right? There are a lot of bad lawsuits out there and I don't want to see a flood of them, but to me, the right of privacy, and which in California is a constitutional right of privacy, is so important that to not allow enforcement, you know, personal enforcement of that sort of thing, just for the fear of it being abused, you know, that is a balance that you have to strike. But it's one that I come down very clearly on the side of private right of action.
I absolutely do, not just because that's kind of my bread and butter practice, but that is one reason. I'll tell you, trolls are terrible for like the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. There are people out there that go and buy burner phones and essentially sign up for automated calls and then call back and tell them they're not, and then file all these lawsuits. And look, the federal courts hate seeing those things, and the state courts hate seeing them too. But there's always some sort of level of necessary evil when you look at stuff like that. I mean, if we were talking about somebody going in my house and rummaging through my underwear drawer, you know, I don't really care if somebody else is screaming, you know, down the street and doing it every day and, you know, basically ginning up lawsuits about somebody doing that. I don't want somebody going through my underwear drawer. So I think it's necessary to have a private right of action. And the bigger problem, and I know we're getting back to it, but it's just there's not enough manpower for an AG's office to do it. The AG offices for each individual state do so many things. And it's the same with the U.S. Attorney's offices, except when you're talking about the United States Department of Justice, you're talking about an entity that has unlimited resources to do whatever it wants to do. And for instance, the Georgia AG, the California AG, they get a budget. And they can't just say, hey, today we're going to go after Microsoft for 40 different people, and Microsoft say, okay, we're going to go get the ivory tower law firms that we always do, and good luck. You know, that's just not realistic. I guess the concern would be the trolls would start like a rash of litigation, and that's, you know, you sometimes hear a lot of complaints about the private right of action statutes not happening. I think it's a little bit overstated. You know, the federal dockets are not that full with claims for FDCPA, FCRA. They're a healthy amount of them. In some parts of the country, like South Florida, that, you know, there are a really healthy amount of them. But it's not to the point that it's shutting down the wheels of justice. It's not to the point that legitimate lawsuits are not being heard. So I think that's where the protection is built in, is the courts are going to kick stuff out, and they will sanction troll plaintiffs when somebody calls them out on it.
Next question.
Hey, so you mentioned a preference for not having federal legislation and having more state legislation, especially with the concern that they would weaken some of the rules. But is there any concern kind of in the opposite direction of, we have 50 states with their own flavors, of laws, and now you have national companies that need to find a way to comply with all of these different flavors of legislation that are inconsistent with one another.
Do you want
to? Yeah, sure. I think that's absolutely the industry's concern with exactly this and why they would want something on a national level. I think the concern, though, is at a national level, it's going to be a compromise, and it's going to be a compromise of what all of Congress from 50 states says. And so what you're going to wind up with is the bottom rung, whatever state sets the bottom threshold. It may be Georgia, it may be Wyoming, it may be Texas, it may be Alaska, whatever state sets the bottom threshold, the floor. That's what you're going to be stuck with, because you're not going to get anybody to go on board with what the ceiling is. And so I certainly think the industry would be on board with wanting that, because that's what's best for them, to get one overarching law that's going to be less restrictive for them than what you might get somewhere like California or Texas or Vermont.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not like vehemently opposed to a national law. I mean, just to be clear, like if we had a strong law that didn't undermine any of the wins we've already made, and you know, really I felt protected our privacy, I would probably be okay with that. Not having seen language, I'm speaking theoretically. But I, you know, we're already seeing industry after years of saying, well, self-regulation is enough, and you know, seeing time and time again that it is not. Now they are saying, well, maybe we do deserve a national law, and that makes me very, very nervous.
I also think there's an interesting parallel with net neutrality, right? So we had federal net neutrality, RIP, and then the states had their own versions of it, which, you know, every state had its own individual version, but the ones that implemented net neutrality statutes, but they all had the same general principles, which were based on the original federal one. Like, they were using the same model legislation. So in practice, the thing that companies need to comply with ended up being pretty similar. And so if you have a model legislation, even if each of the 50 states does it, and some of them might have more weaker versions of it, if you comply with the most stringent, it's unlikely that it will be much, if any, effort to comply with other ones as well.
So then following up on that, is there a model legislation that EFF has drafted or endorsed or that has broad-based support that you would say, like, this is what the states should be adopting as they piecemeal adopt laws on this topic?
Yeah, sure. So we don't do a lot of model legislation at EFF. One reason for that is, you know, just as a recognition that states have different needs. When you get into negotiations in every state, then, you know, when your model quickly turns into something else, I think the folks who do Right to Repair particularly have learned this. I think we certainly have, you know, we think CCPA is a good base. We'd like to add a private right of action. CCPA has something called the right to cure, which basically sort of gives you a period of time in which, you know, if you're being accused of violating the law, and you could say, well, we changed that policy and we would like to see that either eliminated or tightened, because I think if you are a consumer and you're looking to bring a case, it's hard to go to a lawyer and say, hey, help me make this case, but also, like, it may come to nothing if they just say that they changed their policy. So, there are some strengthening things that we'd like to see. I think in basic, the principles that you were talking about, you know, transparency, control, I think we would like an opt-in on sale and sharing of data. CCPA only deals with sale, and of course that's not how a lot of companies operate. So there are definitely things that we would like to see, and we have many blog posts, which you're welcome to read. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a consumer, just a person who's forced to use the internet for every single thing in my life. And I'm not sure, I don't understand what the legal basis is, I'm not a lawyer either, for not being able to have a private source of action. I thought you had either criminal or civil, and that, are you saying you cannot file a civil case for a violation of privacy? And how can they make a law that says you can't do that?
So to give you the very bite-sized version, and I could talk about this probably for an hour by itself. Under civil statutes, some give you a, or just all statutes, some give what we call a right of action, which is a basis to try and enforce that law. Some don't. Some say, you know, only law enforcement can enforce a crime of murder. You know, that you can't go sue somebody and try to have them thrown in jail for killing somebody. You can sue them for killing somebody and try to get money out of them. There are certain statutes that, by the way they're written and designed, do not provide for a method for a person to sue somebody. It is essentially illegal activity, but you can't personally prosecute it. And it, I personally think it's a backwards way of thinking, but you would be surprised how many laws there are on the books that do not provide any sort of remedy for an individual.
And class actions also, because
right.
they're not brought by the Attorney General.
Correct.
So I'm completely confused and don't understand how you can make a law that takes away my right as an individual or a class to get made whole, or to make someone follow the law.
It goes back to the idea of there's a common law that we brought over from England. I'm trying not to get in the hour-long version. And then we have statutory law, and the people who make the statutes sort of decide what the rules to play by with the statutes are. I'm not saying I agree with it, because I really don't, but it's every single state is like that. There are even federal laws that there are no way for a private individual to enforce.
Oh,
they've been tested. I can go on for hours.
Maybe. Any more questions?
So does the law actually say anything about how you're supposed to verify someone is who they say they are? Because you said you piggyback on existing authentication, which only works if I have an account. So for data brokers, I won't have an account. And for deletions, I should be able to delete without the account. Like, what does the law say? Just make your best effort?
Yeah, there's definitely some. I don't have it memorized off the top of my head, but there are definitely guidelines about how to do that. As far as I'm aware, it's something along the lines of, like, you provide identifying information to identify the individual, defined much more specifically than that. Like in the text of the law, there's like, you know, section A, section B, section C, and it's like, oh, these things are useful for this, these things aren't useful for that. It's kind of understood in this section, the data broker, get your information from the data broker section, that this authentication is just not going to be as good as the I have a password and an account version. And so, like, you don't need to show all the information that you would have to show. So it's like you say, okay, actually, I want to stop collecting information on this individual. And that's kind of okay if you don't have perfect authentication there, because more of an action. Do you have those points memorized? Is that why you grab the thing and you know this off the top of your head?
No.
Oh, darn. I was really hoping. but there is a section explaining, like, it has guidelines about that.
No, I wanted to pile on because there was, I don't know if we covered the talk. I came in late. Did we cover the talk at Black Hat like 3 weeks ago about the GDPR? So there was a guy at Black Hat, which is a cyber EFF type con in Vegas that happens every year, and he gave a talk about the GDPR and how he's an academic at the University of Oxford, I believe. He said that basically one in four companies are so terrified of this legislation and the need to comply that they ended up responding to BS data requests. Somebody had cited the law and they didn't authenticate who was on the internet transaction, and so they ended up providing the entire dossier of whatever company it was. He found like 60 different companies that did this. So I wanted to continue to reiterate whether or not are we asking for, do we have authentication requirements? Are we going to continue to rely on these organizations to be diligent, right, when dealing with our data, which arguably that's the reason the law's here in the first place, just because they're not.
Yeah, understandable. So I think actually, I think this was the one that we were talking about earlier. I didn't know this person also gave a talk at Black Hat. But in this talk, so under GDPR, when you give this information, when you attempt to authenticate yourself to the organization under GDPR is required to give back everything that they have on you. That is not what not everything they have on you, but like, you know, information that they have on you. That is not what CCPA does. CCPA instead says, if you can authenticate yourself as this person, we're not going to take the chance of giving you someone else's data. Instead, what we're going to do is give you like a checkbox to say, actually, can you stop collecting data on me now? And so it doesn't have to be quite as perfect, right? Like, you know, this talk was at Black Hat, so there's a whole culture there of like all the social engineering and everything like that, right? It is known that there are many ways to get into other people's accounts. Like the worst that you can do if you do this manner of like hacking into someone else's account under this particular section of it is, oh no, I've accidentally requested that this other person doesn't have data collected about them. And that's like the worst harm that can happen from getting into someone else's account. So it's like where there's less authentication, there's less possible harm is the trade-off. That's better under CCPA than under GDPR.
Okay.
My one other experience with a lot of this legislation in the past in one way or another, and I'm curious if there's anything in the bill yet, is that once they've been put on notice or once you've made the request and then somewhere in there's language that they made the best effort to comply, that they've more or less limited their liability to further action. Hey, we tried and geez, if you found we still have 200 megabytes of info on us, well, tough, we tried. Is there, are there limits expressed in the law that hey, they made a best effort and they're good, or at least at this point, I suspect there's going to be a lot of amendments listing stuff like that.
You're asking for requests on like right to know what they have, or
Right. So just saying that the spirit of the law is I go in, I check the box, and they can't collect data anymore. Maybe they give me a right to delete my history with them or something. Of course. Then they go and they do it. They delete your first name and your last name, and then that's it. The rest of the stuff is still there for implementation. But we made our best chance if it ever comes out. You know, we attempted to comply, and so now we're harmless. Are there limits to liability in the way that law is built? That once they've made their, quote, best effort, then they're off the hook. Yeah.
I actually don't have something to say about this, but I want to amend my previous statement, which is that like many other parts of the CCPA, it instructs. I was getting a step ahead and talking about the guidelines that the Attorney General's office has already started putting together. Like everything else, it instructs the Attorney General to put it together. The Attorney General is the one who has the guidelines about authentication. Sorry, back to the current question.
which I am also going to throw on the Attorney General's office. As you can tell, we're very excited about the Attorney General regulations because I think they're going to make a lot of things about compliance much more clear. So. All right.
I do think that there will likely be some sort of, I would call it a safety valve. If you look at any of the real tried and trusted, you know, consumer protection statutes, is what usually is called a bona fide error defense of, you know, hey, we made a mistake. It requires them to show things. Usually it's a bunch of BS. That's my opinion. I think the damages are sort of, if my understanding, the damages were $7,500 for an intentional violation and $2,500 or less for an unintentional violation. So I wouldn't be surprised to see if there isn't some sort of error, you know, safety net for businesses to say, whoops, you know, Joe didn't hit the right button. You know, whatever. We trained him, he hit the wrong button.
All right, we are at time. Thank you all so much. This is a really interesting conversation. You added so much to it, and we really appreciate you coming by. Thanks, everyone. Oh, yes, and please rate us on the app.